Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome today. As we go into our conversation, I know you all are dying to hear this one because it affects us all. I'm going to let you know that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorder Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and the latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advanced stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-492-5538. Folks, anybody who's been watching the news or watching their local news, reading newspapers, reading it on the web, we know that the day struck midnight. The clock struck midnight, I should say. It's usually a celebration called Sine Die. Everybody parties because the end of the session is over. You got your work done. Well, for some reason, the work didn't get done. And there was no reconciliation between the budget, between the House and the Senate over the budget. There could be $550 million or more of cuts if something doesn't change to schools, to many other places. Gambling was left on the table. The budget was left on the table. A number of things were left on the table. We're going to talk about that, what happened, what might happen. The governor has yet to say that there's going to be a special session, though anybody who's a betting man, and it seems like we want more than just casinos. We want casinos in this state, so I guess everybody wants to be a betting man today. If you'll be a betting human being, then the governor will call a special session. We're going to talk about that. Four delegates join us here this hour, and you can join us as well at 410-319-8888. Delegate Dr. Mary Washington joins us, state delegate for here in Baltimore City, District 43. Good to see you, Mary.
Great always. To see you again. It's good to be home.
Sean Tarrant is with us, Maryland State Delegate, Democrat, in District 40 here in Baltimore City. Good to have you again, Sean. Always good to see you. Even though you're not a very happy man today, it's good to see you. Tom Hucker joins us by phone. Tom is a Maryland State Delegate, Democrat from District 20, Montgomery County. Tom, you're welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Mark.
Jeannie Hadaway Riccio joins us as well. She's a Maryland State Delegate, a Republican, and House Minority Whip, who represents Caroline, Dorchester, Talbot, and Wicomico counties. And Jeannie, welcome. Good to have you with us as well.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, too.
410-319-8888 is the number here to join us. You can join us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can also log on to our Facebook pages and make your comments there. Several people have already. We'll read some of those comments that will come on both the Mark Steiner Show, Mark Steiner page and the Mark Steiner Show page. One day we'll unite them, have all you thousands together. But meanwhile, we've got two pages. 410-319-8888 is the number here. So what happened? Why? How could we get to the point? This every time we had this conversation from the beginning of the session when we had the Annapolis Summit with the governor and the speaker and the president of the Senate, we knew that there was this huge structural deficit facing the state, that this was going to be the main issue that we had to wrestle with, how we're going to kind of pay our bills and take care of the citizens and take care of the schools and fight over what should and shouldn't be there. And how you get to a point at the very end where it doesn't happen. And maybe just start for a moment just with Sean. The only reason I'm starting with Sean, I can't see you, Tom or Jeannie, but I can see Sean's face. And Sean is a despondent man at the moment, not happy about this outcome. So if you don't mind, let me start with Sean. Sean, go ahead.
Thank you. Well, we started yesterday's session where we still had some issues with the budget, where the House and the Senate had conference committees, and they were trying to come together on some of the issues as far as, like, for example, the high-income earners, about taxing them. The Senate wasn't too crazy about that, but the House was okay with it. So you had that part about disagreeing.
Charging people taxes above $150,000,
right,
or even $100,000, it wasn't that huge a burden that was being put on those folks making that money.
But, however, they couldn't come to terms on that. Right. So that was one issue. But there were several others. But the biggest one of all that we were dealing with, especially for the Baltimore City delegation, was the casino bill that the House did not really take up in earnest to very late in the session. The Senate had it all worked that they were familiar with it. I mean, we even had Baltimore City senators that were co-sponsors of legislation that we were not familiar with, and we didn't have a hearing. And I mean, it was insane, to be honest with you. And so we had a real showdown, and the mayor came down, Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake, Monday evening to talk to us about it. Well, in support. She, matter of fact, she came down. We actually had delegation meeting 8 a.m. Monday morning, which is unheard of, to have a Baltimore City delegation meeting, and then a 9 o'clock Democratic caucus meeting. So we started off really rough. It was a rough start that morning. And so we had a lot that was going wrong to begin with. And so as we approached 12 o'clock midnight, we knew that things were not going to work itself out. We're not going to be able to resolve our issues, and we're not going to put the casino bill up for a vote because the votes were just not there. And so what we decided to do was vote to extend the session. So it takes 85 votes constitutionally to be able to extend the session without the governor calling a special session. And so this way you could only work with just the budget, which we were concerned with because we have to pass a balanced budget, and that's what we're required to do. So we were in place to do that. However, the Senate did not vote to extend the session. They wanted the governor to call a special session. This way, the legislature could consider other types of legislation,
like gambling.
Especially gambling. So that's the gamesmanship right there.
So let me turn now to Jeannie Hattery-Riccio, and just to be clear, for people to understand, the gambling bill had to do with allowing table games and extending to a sixth site. Am I correct?
Correct.
That's an audit. And this may go to referendum if it comes up in the special session. So, Jeannie, join us with your perspective on what happened here.
Well, I mean, from my perspective, I think that we kind of have to back up and look at the very beginning of the process. You know, the governor's proposed budget this year grew by over $1 billion. That's $1 billion with a B. And it was contingent on raising over $300 million in more taxes and more fees. And I think that there was so much discontent over the taxes and fees in particular that they separated a budget into separate components. So you had the actual budget bill, and then you had a separate bill with the taxes in it, and then there was even a third bill that's referred to as the BRFA that had some of the fee increases and some of the rating of funds that tends to go on. So by separating them out, it allowed for a scenario where the budget could be passed without raising taxes and without increasing fees and raiding funds. And some of us would say that that's actually a good thing. You know, we have citizens in this state that are struggling. They're sitting around their tables every day trying to figure out how they're going to make ends meet and how they're going to do more with less. Meanwhile, in Annapolis, everyone's trying to figure out how to raise taxes so they can spend $1 billion more than we did last year. I just feel like the agenda in Annapolis is a little bit out of touch with the people's agenda.
And let me turn now to Delegate Mary Washington.
Well, as you can see, you're going to have three delegates and three perspectives. And I agree with the delegate from Dorchester. How you doing anyway? I haven't seen you in a long time. So you're gonna have different views. So, but I'll go back and say, you know, one of the things we wanted to do. Everybody's, you know, constantly talked about how the budget has grown $1 billion. All of us know that it costs more to light our houses than it did 3 years ago. It costs more to pay gas than it did 3 years ago. General expenses when your kids get older and they grow out of their clothes and you have to get them new clothes. On a state perspective, there's the same thing. Machines have to be replaced. Rooms have to be painted. You know, there's lots of things that are normal increases. One of the things that we were trying to do is make sure that we didn't, unlike the minority party's proposal, we didn't want to decrease our per pupil foundation funding, and that's very key. We didn't want to reduce it $50 per student, and that was going to cost $70 million to make sure that we did that. We didn't want to decrease or get rid of teacher quality incentives. We didn't want to reduce disparity grants that went to places like Allegheny County, that went to some of the poorer areas in southern Maryland. So there was absolute disagreement about. I'm not going to say that there was disagreement about the priorities to protect, but there was a difference of opinion between the state, the House, and the Senate with regard to the revenue package. And our position was is that we didn't want anyone with incomes less than $100,000 to experience an income tax increase. The Senate offered a proposal, which, you know, it could certainly have been reasonable, that would spread that out across all income brackets. So, in other words, no one would be protected from an income increase. And also something that we something else that was proposed in the Senate package that we didn't want was a phase out on the amount of income tax deductions that people could file on their state taxes. And so we know that a lot of families need those deductions. They need their mortgage interest deduction. That's one of the ways that people are able to own homes. It allows them to pay for some of those large expenses that happen once a year. So the House was reluctant to take some of those measures that were going to help you know, people whose income was less than $55,000 a year. So there was absolutely a legitimate difference of opinion with regard to how to fund our priorities.
Well, let me, Delegate Tom Harker, then I have some real specific questions. We'll open the phones here, 410-319-8888 as well, Tom. Tom, go ahead.
Well, I, you know, without repeating what's been said, I agree quite a bit with what Delegate Washington has said, and you can tell she serves on the Appropriations Committee and become quite an expert on these topics. Just to be clear what was said earlier, Mark, I mean, I do want people to realize we did pass the operating budget, we did pass the capital budget. You know, the lights will be on tomorrow, the state government will continue. It's nothing like when Republicans shut down the federal government. You know, in Congress years ago, that had such a bad reaction from the public. We passed the budget. What we didn't do is pass the revenue going forward, you know, into the next the fiscal year and beyond. So that's what we, you know, is presumably going to be on the table when we have a special session, you know, later on this year. I think the strategic mistake is, you know, that I wouldn't have made or done is tying the gambling revenue bill to the budget. We really could have dealt with that, probably earlier when it crossed over to the House. We could have, you know, but in any case, the linkage between that and the budget, you know, I don't think is really appropriate. But, you know, we passed the budget, and, you know, I think we'll come back and deal with the revenue at a later date. But, you know, basically we're okay.
Well, so let me ask this, a couple of questions that have popped up. Let me ask them both at the same time, and you can comment on both of them about what held it up. Some people have argued already that what held it up was all the focus on marriage equality.
Yes.
That people say sucked the energy out of the room and didn't allow the House and Senate to get down to the brass tacks of dealing with the budget. Now, then well, let's wrestle with that for a minute. And the other one was that at the very end, it was the gambling interests that took over the Senate and stopped the process from going on. And I will say here that from the very beginning, for the last 12 years, we've been debating or more this gambling issue on this show. And as many of our guests have said, as soon as you have legal slots, the next thing is going to be gaming tables and casinos. And, of course, that's what's happening to the state, whether you agree with it or not. I mean, that's the next move. But let's take a step backwards here. I mean, did those things start with the marriage equality and then gambling? Did they hold up the process?
I would say they did, especially in – we knew that in the Senate they had the votes to pass marriage equality. We did not have the votes in the House. I am a deputy majority whip. We did not have the votes, and we also don't necessarily, as a caucus, we don't whip certain issues as far as abortion issues, death penalty, and gay marriage. So you don't have the wringing of the hands of the normal process and trying to twist people's arms to do what you'd like for them to do as far as passing legislation. So that really rested in the camp of the governor. The governor got all excited this summer, and he was going to make sure that it passed in New York. So he was going to be front and center. So that changes the dynamics in Annapolis when you have the governor have an agenda himself. I mean, he of course he does have products that he wants to get passed, but however, this was just a little bit different. So it did slow us up in the House. We had members that were out that were going to vote for it. We had to wait till they came back. Basically, because you didn't stand a chance when you had members that were ill, that were out or out on business. And so I'm going to say yes, it did slow us up and take our eye off the larger picture.
Mary, go ahead, and then I'm going to go to Tom and
yeah,
Jeannie.
I'm afraid that I'm going to have to disagree just a bit. I do think that it was a tremendous lift. And I think emotionally, if there is sort of a sort of an emotional state of a body, I think it was absolutely draining because it did require a lot of work. I mean, in addition to proponents of civil marriage, there were very active opponents who were working equally hard, who were, you know, calling press conferences and who were meeting and who were trying to pick off people who were identified as changing their points of view. So, again, I don't want to let it stand that it was only the proponents of civil marriage that were using their energy. But what I want to say is that but the way I want to push back is that, you know, while the HGO and while the judiciary were considering that bill, they were also considering many other bills. I was in appropriation. I can tell you, we continued to have our hearings on all things related to the budget. Over the course of the session, 2,300 bills got introduced and 700 of them got passed. So absolutely, I think there was a kind of an emotional kind of, oh, we've passed the finish line for some people, but I'm going to push back and say that I wouldn't lay it at the foot of civil marriage.
And she's right. So, I mean, let me just Delia Washington is right. She's saying that you had the people who were for and against. I mean, I talked to members that told me that they had gotten calls from national leaders that said for it and also against it. People were hearing from people very high up in certain religious groups. You know, in Italy. So, I mean, it was insane on both sides. So Delegate Washington is right in that regard.
So, Jeannie and then Tom, I mean, how do you think about what I posited here about what it might have held it back? Some people are arguing about this. Jeannie.
Well, let me say this. I do think that the Civil Marriage Protection Act did take a lot of time out of the session. It also took a lot of political capital, and I think that's evidenced by how close the vote was in the House and the Senate. It was 72-67 in the House, 25-22 in the Senate. And not just that, also the wind energy bill. We spent a tremendous amount of time talking about whether to do a $4 billion offshore wind project, talking about growth, trying to contain and prevent growth in the rural areas. We spent so much time on these issues. What happened to the agenda of jobs, 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 and economic recovery? That's what this session was supposed to be about. And instead of focusing on those things and instead of focusing on balancing the budget, we ended up with all these other ancillary issues that really took a lot of tremendous political capital to get accomplished.
And Tom, a quick thought on that, and I'm curious very quickly. I really want to get to the phones here and get to what's going to happen now. But I'm curious about this gambling interest too. It felt like to me that the gambling interest really kind of took hold at the end, through Mike Miller and others of this session because they wanted to push
the priority that
became
of the Senate.
All of a sudden, out of nowhere,
they were more interested in passing the gaming and casinos than in passing giving us. We didn't get the conference report on the budget until very late. And I'm sorry, Tom, you were going to talk
ahead, Tom.
About it.
Tom Hucker.
Well, Mark, just real quickly, I think on the same-sex marriage issue, you know, I think that's really, really unfair to that issue. The fact is, you know, I'm sure that sort of charge is out there. I don't think that has a lot to do, respectfully, with how business actually gets done in Annapolis. We spend most of our time in committees, as Jeannie had pointed out, and, you know, very little each day on the floor until, you know, well beyond the second half of the session. So, you know, while the Health and Government Operations and the Judiciary Committee were taking up day after day the complexity of same-sex marriage, you know, the Appropriations Committee and the Ways and Means Committee are the ones dealing with the budget and revenue, respectively. So they're in different rooms. They're meeting at the same time of the day. And I feel very confident marriage equality didn't slow down any action on the budget any more than, you know, as Jeannie said, the offshore wind bill is in our committee in economic matters. We're talking about that while the other committees are talking about those issues. You know, we're able to walk and chew gum at the same time, and I think it's unfair to that issue, to the marriage equality issue, to tag it with any responsibility for, you know, the budget stalemate. And secondly, there's no question about the what happened over the last 24 hours or so. The Senate's position, I don't think it's in any dispute, said we don't want to pass the revenue bill until you pass the gambling bill. And the House didn't have the votes, doesn't have the votes today for the gambling bill. So that's where things are. I think it's inappropriate to tie those two issues. I think we ought to, you know, raise the revenue we need for the public services that people expect and deserve without having to talk about, you know, gambling as part of it. But, so, you know, that's the position of the Senate, and, you know, that's how we got to where we are. It had nothing to do with marriage equality.
So I'm going to open the phones here. I mean, so what we're going to see is a special session is going to be called. There's no question about it. I think Martinelli has to do it, and he will do it. I mean, I say how he can't do it, just politically on his watch how he can't do it. So some people lay the blame of this at his doorstep, too. We'll talk a bit about that, whether that's true or not. But that will mean that the gambling issue will probably end up as a referendum along with marriage equality and the Dream Act.
Well, it will anyway. I mean, what we would be doing is voting to allow Prince George's County to have a referenda on the issue.
So, just Prince George's County?
Yeah.
The whole state.
I'm sorry, yeah. The whole state to get another location.
And to allow gaming and to allow tables.
Right.
And so, I mean, you're going to see millions and millions of dollars from the gambling industry pouring into the state to win that referendum. Millions of dollars are going to be poured into the state for that.
And the table games would be, just to be clear, in every location.
In every location.
Five current slots locations as well as this proposed sixth location in Prince George's. They wouldn't just be in southern Prince George's County.
And whether you're for or against it, despite all proponents on my show over the last years and the arguments taking place, no, we don't want gaming tables. We don't want casinos. Okay. 410-319-8888.
Let's hear from the people.
Julian, you're on the air in Randallstown.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, John.
You know, your guests all stated their positions very eloquently, and I certainly appreciate them taking the time to be here. Let me just state that I'm a lifelong Democrat, and lately I have been having this thought in my mind, at what point do we become what the Republicans call us, which are tax and spend? I think to increase the budget by $1 billion is shameful. I think I'm so sick and tired of the governor, whoever the governor is, coming along with a gun, pointing to the legislator's head, saying, if you do not do what I want you to do, the world will come to an end, schools will close, and all the kids will be hungry. I'm tired of that. The tax increases. I think, once again, do folks down there recognize, and not everybody, because obviously somebody do recognize it, this is the worst economic disaster this country's had since the Great Depression, yet you're talking about raising taxes. One of your guests, again, stated, you know, everything is going up, therefore the state must go up. That's not true. Everything is going up in my family. My salary is not going up. I have kids in college. I make over $100,000. But the difference is I have to make sacrifices because I just can't go out and print more money. I can't make my boss give me more money. They're not doing it. In fact, I'm getting a furlough. So increasing taxes is a bad idea. I mean, the governor comes along and says, I want to put 6% on sales tax. I mean, 6% sales tax on gasoline. I mean, what planet are these folks from? And the casinos. Mark, the biggest mistake we've made was not having the state run these casinos if it's such a good idea. Because already the casino whole debacle is shameful. I mean, here we are talking about we want to have a casino in Prince George's County. Therefore, in order to get other folks on board, like the mayor of Baltimore and the rest of them, you put all these sweeteners in the pot. We have to give 90% of the revenue to the casino owners because they get table games. If the table games are going to bring more revenue, why should they get 90% of the cut? I mean, if it's such a burden that you need to get 90%,
then
maybe
you shouldn't
do it. Julian, let me respond, and I'll just tag this on. And everybody wants to jump in. I want everybody to have a quick say on this,
right?
Because this is what's going to happen. My prediction is, if it passes, then 2 or 3 years from now, you're going to hear the folks that own the Marriott downtown and the hotels downtown. We have a lot of space. We should have tables in our places, too. It'll be more tourists to Baltimore. Watch. That's the next step. Sean.
Real quickly, Julian, I like your point about when the Democrats say enough is enough and when do we put ourselves in a position where Republicans become right when they say we're tax and spend liberals. And that's the reason why we were unable to come to terms this year, because there are a lot of Democrats that said no more. The gas tax was dead on mention. It wasn't like we needed we should not even waste the taxpayers' money even having a hearing. It was going nowhere. So we have rejected some increases that were proposed, and so I think that and the legislature, we have become a little more moderate, especially the House of Delegates has become a lot more moderate as far as how far we're willing to go as far as taxing people. But also when it came to people who were making less than $150,000 a year and families, we said that we wanted to actually help people. And so for sometimes to help people who have less, people who have more have to give more. And people don't like to hear that, but it's what has to happen to make our state work, to keep people working. We didn't want to lay off any people. We didn't want to lose our services. And so this is why we had to look at some of the increased fees. We didn't want to do that, but we're here now, and we're doing the best we can for the citizens of Maryland.
So let me ask Jeannie to jump in, then we'll take a break and come back for the other two delegates as well. Jeannie, because, so I know you like to hear Democrats say that they're tired.
I'm sorry, I had a hard time hearing that last.
I said, I know you like to hear Democrats say they're tired.
I'm still having trouble hearing you. I'm
you
sorry.
Are? All right, well, can you potter up a little bit, Michigan? I was making a joke. It's all right, but you can go ahead. Did you hear the caller?
Okay, yes, I did hear the caller. And let me just say that I agree with him wholeheartedly. I mean, first the governor proposes a gas tax, and that doesn't stick. So then it's a sales tax on gas, and that doesn't stick. So then it's a sales tax increase. It was just like one thing after another, just bouncing ideas off the wall to see what sticks. And in the meantime, you know, people are at home and they're struggling. And let me just say, too, that the most egregious thing that has been happening, in my view, over the last couple of years is them taking taxpayer dollars out of dedicated funds and then raising the fees and making the taxpayers pay it back twice, and in some cases, three times. That's what we've seen with the Transportation Trust Fund. That's what we've seen with the Chesapeake Bay Restoration Fund. We saw it even for the Maryland Relay for the Deaf, a telephone service that is used by deaf people in the state, the Waterway Improvement Fund, on and on and on. It's not fair to take the money and spend it and then make the citizens pay it back twofold and sometimes threefold. We've gone from tax and spend to spend and tax, which is worse.
We take a very short break and come back to our delegates. And I also want to announce, when we do come back, two bills that passed, both brought by two of our guests, that were the first bills like that in the country. We'll talk about that in a minute as well. Stay with us. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. On our way back to conversation, I'll remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. We are here with Delegate Mary Washington, Delegate Sean Tarrant, Delegate Tom Hucker, and Delegate Jeannie Hadaway Riccio, talking about why we couldn't get the job done in 90 days in Annapolis. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We'll have the senators on soon with delegates to hear their side of the story as well. We tried today. It didn't work. But we said we'd go to Jeannie, right? So we're going next to
she just no back
oh
to
back
one,
to
one
you
us.
I'm sorry, thank you. I need that sometimes. No, I don't know where am I yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Mary.
But I know the good delegate could absolutely talk. We all can, actually. That's one of the occupational requirements. But just to dovetail on, again, the caller brought up some really important issues and concerns. And, again, what I'm going to say as a Democrat that I continue and many of us continue to believe that the government does have a role in ensuring public safety, in the education of our young people, and where possible, you know, improving the quality of life and protecting the environment and all the things. I have to remind the caller that the roads that we drive on are maintained by the state government. When your car breaks down and somebody comes to pick you up, a police officer is doing that. Somebody is taking care of your child during the day, or your parent if they're sick. And there are many, many things that government does, and it costs money. And we have cut a lot, even though the budget grew. It's really a miss. It's sort of directing you the wrong way. There were cut. The budget could have grown even more, but there were significant number of cuts that were made. And then back to the tax part, one of the reasons why we couldn't come to agreement was that we wanted to only affect the 8% of Marylanders who nationally, whose incomes are rising. The top 8% are doing better than they did four or five years ago, even in this economic downturn. So we thought, again, that as in our district, I actually got calls from people who said, who were the higher earners, who said that they wouldn't mind sort of having a higher tax rate so they can make sure that the people that are less fortunate get their basic needs met.
Now, Tom, you want to jump in on this, and then I have something to throw out to you all and get back to the phones.
Sorry, Mark. Jump in on the budget?
Yeah.
But it was just that, you know, we're tax and spend, and do you agree?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think Mary's right. I think the House put forward
a put it like that.
you know, I think there's sort of a competing argument here. The Senate, you know, on the one hand, I like what the Senate tried to do, which is raise a lot of money so we could address a lot of the needs that every year people bring before us, and they ask, you know, people are constantly, if you read my mail, you read my emails, people are constantly asking for more funding for our public schools, and we're very proud we have the number one schools in the country 4 years in a row. There's 49 other states that want that designation. Only Maryland has the top schools in the country, and that's because we've made the investments to make that happen. We have a world-class healthcare system. We have a very good transportation system, as Mary said. All that stuff does cost money, and, you know, I like the fact that the Senate came in with a big revenue proposal, but, you know, the fact is we've been going through a period of increasing income inequality, and working and middle-class families have been hit very, very hard. So the fact that the House proposed came forward with a proposal where, you know, everybody below the, you know, 93% of the public was held harmless, and really the top, you know, 7 or 8% are the only ones that would be contributing more with the higher income tax, you know, that makes a lot of sense. Unfortunately, we didn't reach agreement, but I'm confident we'll get there during the special session.
And there were bills passed. As I said, I would mention earlier that Tom Hucker was one of the folks who put the bill in to ban the use of arsenic in poultry that passed the House and the Senate, though some people, Tom, that we were interviewing this morning will be on later in the week on our show with our Eastern Shore partners at Delmarva Public Radio are saying that, well, yeah, but the other one, but it did slip through because arsenic is still going to be there in a different form. But also the bill that Delegate Mary Washington put in that had to do with privacy and the employers not being able to get your password to look at your social media.
And Delegate Tarrant is my co-sponsor on that bill. But yeah, I was the lead sponsor, and Senator Young was the lead sponsor on the Senate side. And it's national. Maryland is the first in the country to pass those types of protections.
Both on arsenic and on this, the first
yes,
in the country.
Absolutely. So we like to lead.
We do. Right. And if I can just say, he's listening too. My constituent, Mr. Robert Collins, was the person that brought the issue to Senator Young and then to myself and also Delegate Washington. So he was the one that got the ball rolling. So as constituents, people listening, everyday people, you're the ones that make the difference. And Mr. Robert Collins, you're the hero.
And the ACLU bringing the case,
right,
and
helping us.
and helping him. Yes.
Help.
Yes.
So let me go back to the phones here. When we come back, I want to ask
Mark, can I just address the arsenic thing?
Oh, please do, Tom. Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry, Tom.
Oh, well, you know, to Sean's point, it was actually a constituent of mine who was a scientist at the EPA who didn't believe they were doing enough to keep arsenic and other dangerous compounds out or chemicals out of our environment, that said we should take this approach at the state level. The fact is we have far too much cancer, heart disease, and diabetes in Maryland. Arsenic is a cause of all those things, and we only recently realized that the chicken industry has been feeding adding an arsenic laced antibiotic to chicken feed for many, many years and requiring all the chicken farmers to use that feed. So some of that arsenic, the FDA showed this summer, ends up in the bird itself and in the food product. Most of it passes through the chicken into chicken litter, which is spread all over the Eastern Shore as fertilizer, which then washes off into the bay when it's raining and binds to the soil when it's not raining. It adds up to 30,000 pounds of arsenic every year, and we've been doing it every year since 1946 when the drug was approved. So I'm very glad that Maryland took the first step to ban this product. And to your point, Mark, all the the way the bill was amended, it's a ban on all arsenical drugs, including the main one, Roxrazone. We carved out one very small exemption for turkey farmers that use one drug, but that's a tiny fraction of 1% of the arsenic that's been going into our environment. So I was comfortable making that compromise in order to get the bill out and make history by passing it.
And I'm going to go back to the phone, unless Jean, you have a comment on either one of these two things.
Sure. Well, let me start with Delegate Washington and Delegate Tarrant's privacy bill. That bill actually came through my committee, and we spent some time looking at it, and we thought that it was amazing that this was even happening, and we thought it was a very reasonable bill, and it passed very easily in our committee, and we thank them for bringing it to our attention. The arsenic bill, of course, is a little more complicated, and just to be clear, not every poultry company uses arsenic, but it is a form of control for heartworms and illnesses. But again, I thought that Delegate Hucker and also the Environmental Matters Committee did a really nice job of working with all of the stakeholders and trying to bring together a product that everyone could agree to and could move forward. So you might hear...
Yeah.
In Annapolis, that we don't always get things done, but there are some things that we do agree on and that we are able to accomplish together.
So let us go to the phones at 410-319-8888. Terry, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Terry. Welcome.
Hi. Listen, I am very disappointed about the wind farm legislation not passing because all these other issues are important, but it's getting very, very late for us as a planet to address these issues. We must get to the point where we're not using fossil fuel or we're not using much of it. And this was going to be a really big, major thing. And the only thing I could see when I Googled real fast online was that Mr. Middleton thought that it would add $2 to everybody's bill every month. And I know that that's a lot. That's a concern for some people who have to pay that bill. But really, to me, nothing else is anywhere near the importance of this because, you know, it does. If you've got slots or not slots, if this earth can no longer support us to live, what difference does any of that other stuff make? And, we're Maryland, right? We're just a state on the whole planet. And the people that are already feeling the effects of climate change are not us. They're people who have too much water or not enough in other parts of the world. But where is the connection between the budget of one state and the legislative priorities of one state and the fact that we're all going to survive or not survive together in the long run? We got to make the connection between local politics and the health and survivability of our species on this globe. We have to do it. If we don't do it now, we're going to do it later. So I recommend doing it now.
And let me just add to that. Ted Weber wrote in on our Facebook page, the Senate Finance Committee really dropped the ball on the wind bill. We need to take the global warming seriously before it's too late, and posted an article on our page called Global Warming Close to Becoming Irreversible from the Scientific American. The world is close to reaching the tipping point that will make it irreversibly hotter, making this decade critical in efforts to contain global warming, scientists warned just this past Monday.
I share your disappointment, but let me also tell you, and I'm sure actually Delegate Hucker can tell you more, that we've done a lot in the last 3 to 4 years to pass a lot of environmental bills that are going to move and help protect yes, Maryland. I mean, we're the state of Maryland, and we can only control what happens here, and to protect the bay, to begin to decrease our dependence on fossil fuel. You're absolutely right, and we've been incentivizing alternative forms of energy where we can in Maryland. We have a long way to go, but I agree with you on the disappointment. But we are moving forward.
One comment about what happened in Senate Finance. There was one or two senators that did not support the bill, and one of the reasons why is because wind energy is going to be a $1 billion business. And the days of bringing in a $1 billion business to the state and not being able to guarantee or support minority participation, minorities and also women, that has to happen. And so at the time of the bill, they were looking to only carve out about $100 million that would be a part of the MBE requirement, and a couple of senators rejected that. That's not enough money. If you're talking about $1 billion, and all that you can give is $100 million that you could say you could set aside for minorities and women, it's not going to fly. So hopefully the folks from the industry, when they come back, they'll come back with a better bill that will do more for the MBEs in the state of Maryland.
So, I mean, how do the two of you reflect on that very quickly? Because I do want to get some other callers in here and the other issue. I do want to talk about what's going to happen in this special session. What do you expect to happen? But, I mean, do both of you, Tom and Jeannie, support or not support the wind bill? And why?
Well, Mark, I couldn't agree with the caller more. It's the governor's bill, but I was the lead sponsor in the House, and it went through the committee that both Jeannie and I serve on. She's right. We spent a lot of time on it. It's a very complicated issue. It's not an issue that sort of builds on our current law very much. We're really trying to. It's not just a bill. We're trying to create a whole new industry in Maryland and make Maryland a leader in not just clean energy but all the green jobs that come with it. And so we spent a lot of time on it because we want to make sure we got all the details right. I think the bill that the governor put forward was a good bill, and I think it got made better in our committee. It was made, unfortunately, a little more modest to address some of the cost concerns that that people raised about it. But the fact is, I think the biggest challenge, change is always hard, and it's hard to get people to take action now to make some progress later. But the fact is, people know our cost of energy from nuclear plants has been going up for 10 years. Coal plants going up for 10 years. They're not happy with all the effects of the mix of energy that we have now with not just global warming, but asthma right. and all the health effects that come with the mix of energy we have, and we have to look for alternatives. Mary's right. We've done a lot to encourage solar energy, and we passed a good geothermal bill this year, but we need to do a lot more, and offshore wind is the biggest untapped source of renewable energy that right now is just going to waste. We're not taking advantage of it.
I do want to move on to what's going to happen yep. with our money in the state, so I don't want to get stuck with this too long. But
Delegate Hucker, do you think that there should be a greater percentage? You mentioned about green jobs, and I mentioned about MBEs and making sure that minorities and women are able to participate as a sponsor legislation. What do you think about that?
Well, I think there were a lot of protections written into that bill. There was, first of all, my understanding is it's very unusual. I've heard unprecedented to write in MBE requirements into a private partnership, and everybody was comfortable doing that. But I think we missed an opportunity by not passing this bill because with the minority business requirements that were written into the bill, as we passed it through the House and sent it over to the Senate, this would have been the first time to lock in those kind of requirements into private partnerships in going into the future. And so that's why I think it's a missed opportunity. And number two, it was $10 million that was set aside, which was more than the proponents came in asking for, and they got what they asked for in the House. So, I think it was more than fair in that area, and I'm not really sure that that's why it got hung up.
Well, let me, Jeannie, let's have a comment. I want to get back to the phones here and get our listeners, and then we'll turn right to Jeannie as a first commenter. 410-319-8888. LaVon, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call, and good evening to
good
all
evening.
Your
Welcome.
I wanted to touch back on what the caller asked the question about before the break. I had a question about whether or not some of the billion-dollar increase that's proposed by the increase to the budget that's proposed by the governor, is any part of that has to do with the fact that we had federal budget cuts from the budget that they no longer financed or funded some of our projects, so we had to kick in to kind of pick up the slack, especially for the safety and the well-being and the care of all of our services that we need in Maryland? And if that is the case, then why isn't a better job being done to kind of recognize that rather than let everybody think that the Democrats are just blowing off additional $1 billion.
Thank you so much for that, and I should have thought about that. Absolutely. There's a couple of places. Maryland expanded, using ERA funds, expanded the number of people who could receive health care, and we greatly expanded that. So there are more and more people could qualify for Medicaid than that qualified before. And so as a result of that, part of it is that we had to continue to keep those people on the rolls for a certain period. Unfortunately, under this doomsday budget that people are calling that's now in effect, if we don't pass revenues, many of those people will be removed from the rolls, and we're not going to be able to provide that health care. But thank you. There were lots of things that Maryland did over the last few years to really try to buffer people against the recession, and we're paying for it going into the future.
So the place we are now, what some people call a doomsday budget that we face with all these huge cuts, other people say it's a relief on the taxpayers and we should just let this thing slide. But what's going to happen is there's going to be a special session called. That's going to happen. Whether it happens next week, 2 weeks, or in June, it's going to happen. And I don't think any of you have an idea when it's going to happen. Nobody has that crystal ball, do you?
Jeannie?
Well, it'll have to happen sometime before July 1st.
Right.
And that's about as far as we can tell you at this point.
Yeah.
So what do you think is going to happen? I mean, what will happen in that session that couldn't happen in the 90 days? And how much is that session going to cost us?
Well, the thing is, the first thing you have to do is make sure that...
We're talking to the mic, bro.
I'm sorry. The first thing that has to happen is you've got to have the governor, the House Speaker, and the Senate President. They've got to calm down, come together, and see what they can work out their differences. That has to happen first before we come into any special session, because I almost thought that if we just continued from last night that we could solve things and realize, well, right, no one has made any concessions really, and that you would just be just down there spending time together angry and you wouldn't do anything. So that's really the first step before we even call the special session, that the leaders in the General Assembly and the governor have to come together and what they're going to be willing to work
so
out.
So what will happen differently now, Jeannie, from your perspective, that didn't happen in the first 90 days?
Well, let me first just point out that this doomsday budget that we're talking about that sounds so drastic is really, we're talking about $600 million out of a $34 billion budget. So it's not, you know, unsurmountable, and I would say that it's not as doomsday or as drastic as everyone would like it to sound. But I do agree that Delegate Tarrant's comments that the leadership needs to come together with all of the stakeholders, and they need to have a plan before they call a special session. The notion of calling us into a special session without a plan and just wasting the taxpayers' dollars is just out of the question, in my opinion. I think they definitely need to get some semblance before they call us back in.
And does that happen as a matter of course, or you would just... Oh, it's just wishful thinking.
No, I mean, it's happened. I guess when this happened in 1992, and we've had special sessions, people will talk in advance. I can guarantee you that the leadership on our various committees, after they get a little bit of a break, are going to be back at it informally, having conversations with themselves, the budget committees will, and the revenue committees, and then also the leadership. And just to answer your question, it does cost, I heard it's about $100,000
per day.
Dollars a day, right?
$100,000 a day to bring us back. So the idea is for us to just be there a day or two. We're basically talking.
Tom, I'll let you jump in here because we haven't heard your voice in a couple of minutes, and I can all chime into this. I think most people listening, your constituents, people who vote for you or don't vote for you, are going, well, wait a minute. You're going to make us go back in the session $100,000 a day, and you couldn't get this resolved in 90 days. And people, I wonder why this should be happening. And go ahead, Tom. I mean, why? I mean, this is really kind of people. I think people are really incredulous, and this is one of the, about how politics is played.
I agree. I think it's absolutely ridiculous, and I think that it shows a lack of leadership. And I think that people expect us to step up to the plate as legislators and as elected officials and get the job done in the allotted amount of time. And the governor needs to get engaged in this process and, you know, start bringing people together and proposing plans that people can buy into.
So, and Tom, I mean, how do you respond to your constituents?
Well, I'm you know, I don't think I'm going to hear a lot of complaints from my constituents.
Why?
I think, well, I'll tell you. I think they're pretty, you know, I mean, maybe it's because we're close to the you know, D.C. area and we border, you know, both
and they're used
DC
to politics.
Georgia's, but they're pretty savvy. And I think my constituents, and I can't speak for anybody else's, but I think people, everybody in Maryland ought to realize they get a very good state government for the price. And they get a very efficient state government for the price. I mean, the fact is we consider 2,300 pieces of legislation in 90 days. That's remarkably efficient. We do it on a part-time salary with part-time staff. We have very good, you know, budget analysts and policy analysts and other folks that help us, but we get an awful lot done in a very short amount of time. And if you compare that to what Congress gets done in the course of an entire year, people, you know, ask 10 people on the street, they're pretty unhappy with the amount of work that Congress gets done in a year. And if you look at what most county or municipalities, how many bills they pass in a year, it's a tiny fraction of what people get considered and accomplished by the Maryland legislature. So,
and we can't
pass that worked up about another day or two to deal with these really important issues the right way.
And we can't pass continuing resolutions as they can do in Congress, and so we have to, under our Constitution, pass. And if it bleeds over for one day to do the right thing, I think
right.
The House,
we
felt it was better to not pass, vote for something that we couldn't believe in or support,
right.
Rather than, so I will, what I would say is that we stood firm. I think that the House stood really firm, you know, we don't always get the reputation to do that, and I think in this case, particularly when it came to the revenue package, we stood firm, and as well as gaming being forced to make a decision that it wasn't clear it was in the best interest. I think we stood strong, and I think that's what I would tell my constituents.
Right. We needed more time to, especially when it comes to gaming, we need more time to really vet out that process. I mean, there are so many different parts to that puzzle because in Baltimore, it's not just about the casino. It's also about the convention business. You allow a 6-slot license to go to Prince George's County, and people are able to set up shop in National Harbor. National Harbor is ideal to have a casino with a convention center. So that's going to take money away from Baltimore City. So to tell me in a 2-day span to, you know, vote for it, and the only explanation you have for me is I got the best deal I could get, so trust me. That was not going to happen, and it didn't happen.
Are we? It seems to me, though, in some ways that people get very parochial about this. I mean, that we're talking about these gambling casinos coming. I mean, do we? I'm not saying we do or don't. I'm asking the question: do we want casinos in Maryland? Is that how we're going to get our money? Is that how we decide what happens in our state?
I think that's part of the debate. I think there are people who oppose the bill on policy. Reasons. They don't believe in the expansion of gambling, and then there are those that were concerned. I mean, the caller was absolutely right in that, very concerned. A 90-10 split, that you know, that's really, you know, quite difficult to swallow. So I think,
and it sounded like
there
gambling
are lots of reasons why.
I'm sorry, I mean,
no, I was just saying there's lots of reasons why that bill is sort of needs more time if to make a decision up or down.
And it did feel, when you read what was going on and watch what was going on at the Senate, that it was these powerful gambling interests holding the entire state budget hostage until they got what they wanted. This may be about Prince George's County, but it's a lot more about the folks who own these gambling interests who want to make money.
Oh,
David Cordish, I mean, as far as, and Arundel Mills, I mean, he definitely had an interest. He was hanging around the entire day and evening. He was there. I mean, he's in the paper sitting down. He was so tired from standing and lobbying himself. He's one of your City College buddies. But he's a good man, but he was protecting his interests.
I was kicked out of City College.
You outed yourself, Mark. I'm sorry.
I'm proud of it. I'm not ashamed of what happened to me there. So well, I want to thank all of our guests. That's a story for another day.
Yes, sir.
Yes. So Sean Tarrant, Mary Washington, Tom Hucker, Jeannie Hathaway, Rick Hill. Four people who I think are really hardworking delegates in the state of Maryland. I appreciate you taking the time today to talk to our listeners. And when we see what's happening in the special session, even beforehand, we'd like some of you to come back to kind of wrestle with this with our listeners, maybe even a longer session, no pun intended. So
maybe we extend it.
Good to have you all with us.
Thank you.
We're going to take a brief break. And when we come back from this break, one of the issues we've been covering here for the last 12 years has to do with lawyers at bail, which is one of the issues that was in the Maryland General Assembly. We're going to be talking to folks involved in that issue. It has to do with poor people arrested put in jail, and it's an issue that we have not let go for years. We're not letting go now. Next half an hour, we'll talk about that. Then we meet the incredible Winona LaDuke, a woman whose conversation you don't want to miss. So stay with us. We'll be right back.